Hey guys, and welcome to the Ted Teo Business Show, the best place for actionable advice for entrepreneurs. This is Ted, your friend and host speaking. So we are in the thick of the holiday season, and man oh man am I happy. I'm surrounded by my friends, my family, and of course, good food. Woo! Today we're in for a treat because we are joined by Josh Little, who is a serial entrepreneur who has founded multiple tech companies. His earlier ventures, Maestro and Bloomfire, which he has since exited from, have been wildly successful, and today he's disrupting the way we communicate with Volley. Volley provides users with the ability to communicate with asynchronous communication by allowing them to record videos of themselves, which others can respond to at their own time. So join us as Josh shares about the importance of testing your product or service in the market, how he maximizes his customer retention rates, and his framework to coming up with great business ideas. All these and more on today's show after this quick commercial break. Hey guys, it's Ted. Thank you so much for joining me on my show and for all the support. If you ever found any value from the show, I would love if you could subscribe to the show, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and share the show with somebody who will find it useful as well. The show is running twice a week and we have new episodes out every Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. All episodes, tools, and resources are available on tedteo.com, so make sure you log on to tedteo.com, that's tedteo.com, and make sure you sign up for the newsletter if you want to hear updates from me directly. And now, let's dive right in. Hey Josh, thank you so much for joining us today. It's so nice to have you here.
Oh, it's my pleasure, Ted. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, the pleasure is mine. Now Josh, let's start with a very simple icebreaker. Could you share with us so we can get to know you a bit better? Who is Josh Little when he isn't working?
Oh, that's a good question. Well, a family man for sure who loves God and is probably preparing some sort of musical performance, whether it's on guitar or vocals for choir or with my family, and probably tinkering on something in the garage, either building, you know, some 4x4 truck or making a jar of pickles or one of my many random hobbies. So that's just a little couple swatches on the mood board that is Josh.
Yeah, I know you have a YouTube channel called Josh's Garage where you do the wackiest scientific experiments in your garage itself. Could you share a little bit more about that before we move on with the rest of the interview?
Well, it's really just something to justify the time I spend in this garage of mine tinkering on stuff. But I've done, you know, turning vehicles into overlanding rigs or installing solar panels on the tops of motorhomes, or I've once turned a table saw into a rocket launcher after I had a terrible accident with the kickback of a table saw. So I just wanted to show the world how powerful that blade of a table saw really is. So I've done all kinds of fun stuff.
Well, I'd like to add that you're a natural storyteller and I've subscribed to your channel. Now, Josh, you are a serial entrepreneur and you've had quite a wild journey to say the least. Interestingly enough, I happen to know that one of your first jobs was at the Red Lobster and you called it the best job that you ever had. What was that about?
Well, I really feel like everything I needed to know, I learned at my crappy jobs, like Red Lobster. I worked there for 5 years, put my wife and I through college working there, you know, like with a lot of student debt as well. But it was just a great job. Singing, working with ex-convicts, trying, you know, to get through the night. And you learn a lot of things from those jobs, like how to prioritize. I worked as a line cook for most of that time. I did every job in the restaurant, but I enjoyed being on the line just because of the pressure and being on. And you learn how to think quickly. You learn how to prioritize. You learn how to make decisions. You learn how to move efficiently with your hands, like every movement has to count for two or three things, and how to memorize and so all these little things and being a line cook.
A lot of systematizing of items as well, right? Especially when you're cooking, really is. Go through the steps of the recipe and make sure that everything is executed well enough.
That's right. It is an art, and it was fun to be able to do that night after night. And I got so good at one of the jobs that I was actually able to it was the assembler job where you kind of plate food and get it up in the window and ship it. And I could run two stations in one night because I was able to keep enough in my mind and get so efficient. So it was kind of a quest of excellence, crazy enough, working at a seafood restaurant as a line cook. But I loved that job and love the people I worked with.
So Josh, since then, I know you've moved on to start several companies. You've also exited your companies Bloomfire and Maestro, and among the rest of your existing portfolio companies, you have your current venture, Volley. But before we dive into Explore Volley, could you share with us, how did you achieve your exits with Maestro and Bloomfire? What was the process like?
Well, the process was hard for someone who grew up in rural Michigan and knew nothing about business. I mean, the first day I left my corporate job, I quit cold turkey and started Maestro. I showed up at the Chamber of Commerce asking questions like, how do I start a business? And they told me about this thing called an LLC. And I was like, oh.
Yes, that's important. To get limited liability, right?
That's how unprepared I was. But we figured it out. And we were doing something that was valuable at the time, which is building e-learning programs for corporations. And this is very, very much at the time that everyone's trying to scale their learning programs, build e-learning. And so it was right product at the right time, especially for medical and pharma companies. So Maestro was able to see some good success pretty quickly. And we were able to capitalize on that success and work with dozens of Fortune 500 companies and help build and scale their learning programs and create the content because they didn't have this expertise in-house. And it was from the back of that experience that the idea of Bloomfire came about, because Maestro, we created, you know, these training programs and 3D animated total knee replacements and all these cool things. But only 10% of what you need to know to do your job do you actually learn from training. The rest is learned from all of this informal learning, like that email that this person sent, or that text, or the video that this person created, or, you know, the conversation we had in the hall. And all of that is totally unstructured, not collected anywhere. So that was the original idea of Bloomfire, is let's create a place for all of this to be collected, the organization's collective brain, and give someone all the tools to easily share their knowledge and answer questions for those who need it. So that was the idea of Bloomfire, and it was a hot idea at the time, and it was acquired 18 months after we launched it in 2011.
Which is very impressive.
Today it's the premier knowledge management platform out there. So the acquiring team and took it, you know, the extra 10 miles that it needed to go and got it there. And around the same time, my partner in Maestro, she had felt like she had made the company her own, because it was really the two of us co-founders, and I left to go build Bloomfire, and we kind of copy and pasted cap tables between the companies, and she really wanted to continue running Maestro. I didn't know that I wanted to go back and continue. I wanted to move on. And so we executed a deal and she bought me out of Maestro.
I see. So over the years, it's quite clear that you have an affinity or a specialization in corporations and the tools that help them work more efficiently. And I think that has some link to what you are offering with Volley today. So could you maybe share with us, what is the unique value proposition of Volley that you're trying to offer to your customers?
Yes. So Volley is a video messaging app that helps teams collaborate better, increase connection, and potentially reduce meetings. So the whole idea is we take turns just like any other conversation, except in Volley, you record your turn with a video. And that gives us kind of the best of both worlds, the richness of talking with the flexibility of texting. And if you really think about it, you've only have two ways to communicate at work. One is talking, which means we need to get on Zoom or get in a room. And the other is texting or typing. So that's tools like Slack or email or chat. And you're flipping between those throughout the day. And typing or writing a message has benefits because you can batch it. You can stick it into corners of your day. It's flexible. So we tolerate it because when we choose to write a message to our coworkers, we're choosing to do something we're seven times slower at than this gift we have of speaking, with all of the richness that it is, the words that
the
we speak.
Emotions from speaking itself, right?
Yeah. The words that we speak are only 7% of the message. The other 93% is filled in by tone of voice or body language. Why we're looking at each other when we do this interview. Why podcasts are a lot more informative and valuable than just the written transcript, right?
Exactly.
And so that's the idea of Volley, is we're giving people a new way to communicate at work at a time when connection is low and communication is strained because we're all trying to work remotely. We're all trying to increase that connection. And Simon Sinek has recently just said, hey, this is only working because we're living on borrowed time. We had existing relationships when the pandemic hit. We're still surviving on those. But all of these new relationships, all of these new people that are coming in, they're having a hard time getting connected. So that's the problem that we're focused on solving. But we also, while that is our deliberate strategy, we also have all kinds of communities and coaching that are being built on Volley, and they're just blowing up, and it's really exciting to see as well. So,
well, Josh, I can fully understand the problem that you just described. So for me, I have the benefit of being with my law firm for about 5 years, actually. So I'm familiar with my team, my partners, my mentors, and my colleagues, and we still have that level of camaraderie even through text messages. But it's a bit different for our newer colleagues and the juniors who've been joining us. What I understand is they're feeling a bit more lost. They don't really have a face to the person who's actually instructing them, and they have this barrier to maybe reach out to ask for a little bit more assistance or to really understand what is needed from them. So I can understand that Volley could really step in to help in on this situation, but could you walk us through the process? How would a person really get to use Volley, and how does it really benefit them from a day-to-day basis as compared to the Zoom meetings?
Yeah, well, I'll compare it actually to Slack because there are still reasons, very good reasons, to have a synchronous conversation, especially when something is emotionally charged or when there's a tight feedback loop. For those reasons, yes, you need to get in a room or get on a Zoom. But for everything else, there's Volley, and Volley can kind of span the spectrum of what you might be using something like Slack or Loom. And then some of your meetings don't need to be meetings. We've all heard the comment, this meeting could have been an email, but Slack. So Slack, for example, you were writing these text-based messages back and forth, but with Volley, you can create a workspace just like Slack that has channels and conversations in it. You can invite your team to it. You can create the channels that you're interested in or typically used to. And then instead of typing messages, because Volley is a video first communication tool, meaning when you open it up, there's a camera that has that's staring at you, that has a record button at the bottom. It just feels like that's what you should do. Versus Slack, there's a text-based thread and a text box at the bottom. It feels like, oh, I should write a text message. So that's, you can upload videos to Slack or use their new Clips functionality if you're paying for it, you can also write a text Volley. It's just flipping the importance of video in the conversation. And when we put video first, almost 70% of Volley sent are video Volleys. When you put video first, you are putting all of the context and emotion in that relationship, even in something that maybe doesn't even need it. But even simple messages like "we need to talk" can be misinterpreted. That's the classic one.
That's pretty scary, you know, without a context. Yeah, yeah. And someone above you just says, "Hey, Ted, I need to talk to you right now." You'll be like, "Oh my God, what did I do? Did I screw up? What did I do?"
Right. But if you hear, "Ted, we need to talk," there's no mistaking that. You know exactly, I've got something cool. I can't wait to share it with you.
Yeah, the excitement, you're stoked, right? More than the aggression behind the voice itself.
But we all read it as, "Ted, we need to talk."
Yeah, exactly.
So Volley helps with those misinterpretations throughout the day for sure. But you've got to put it first. You've got to use it instead of tools like Slack, which is hard for some people because they're on Slack crack and Zoom doom and they just can't get off. And so we're just trying to provide another way.
Okay, Josh, so to clarify, Volley isn't here to really replace synchronous meetings like Zoom calls when you actually need to have that immediate face-to-face conversation. If I understand you correctly, Volley is really here to help with the remaining spectrum of meetings that can happen within an office context that is not able to really happen in the remote working environment, right?
Well, sort of. And I love that you acknowledge that there's a spectrum, because there is a spectrum of communication, and it from simple things like sharing a link with someone. You're not going to call a meeting to share a link or to say lunch is here. That would be crazy to have a synchronous discussion about lunch being here, right? So we know there's an asynchronous side of the spectrum. We're going to use email or text or chat for that. And then we also know there's a synchronous side of the spectrum, like a termination conversation or deliberation about a time-bound important decision we need to make today. Like those things, get in a room for those things. Like you don't want to chat about those. You don't want to email about those. Like get your faces together in a room. But there's all of this gray area in between something between Slack and Zoom, right? And so yes, some meetings in the middle of that spectrum, some of the reasons you're getting in a room really are just, they could just be three or four volleys. Like, I just have a question. I can't type it all out. It would take me an hour to type it out. I might as well just explain it to you. I could explain it in 3 or 4 minutes. And then you could see where I'm coming from. You could give me feedback or ask clarifying questions. And then I could clarify my questions. And then you could give me your response. Meeting over. Now, we would probably schedule 30 minutes for something like that. And isn't it crazy that when we schedule 30 minutes, it's exactly 30 minutes. It took exactly 30 minutes to talk about this thing. We must just be brilliant and know exactly how much time it takes to discuss things. No. More likely, meetings are sponges and they take up whatever time you give them. This is Parkinson's law that work will occupy whatever space that you give it to occupy, right? And same is true with meetings. So so yes, we're giving an alternative for the part of that spectrum that you would have scheduled a meeting, but it really is just kind of a couple of volleys. And there's just a lot of communication fits in there. We as a team at Volley only have one meeting a week. For everything else, we're just constantly in the flow of work, syncing up, checking in, unblocking one another. And it's a beautiful thing, but it does require a change in behavior and a change in thinking, because the old instinct is when you need to talk, you just get something on the calendar and that's just the best you can do. But now when you need to talk, you start with a volley. And then maybe you need to meet, but maybe not. So we're just providing an alternative for everything else that doesn't require getting in a room.
It sounds like Volley is providing this avenue where you can have that knock on the door conversation that is no longer available in a remote working environment.
Absolutely. It's the first thing we noticed when we went remote. Is the all of these ad hoc little conversations and popping in. But even better than popping in, we're offering something that isn't interruptive. Because when you send a volley, the other person doesn't have to view it right now compared to popping in. If someone knocks on my door and says, hey, I have a question, I might be writing the last line of the manifesto for our company.
You just
broke my train of thought, and it took me 3 hours to get to this place. I got it. I'm in flow, and you want to know about, you know, the cups for the water cooler or whatever the thing is, right? Like, there's no way it's as important as the last line of manifesto or the last line of code of this hairy bug that we're trying to, you know, solve.
Sounds like you experienced something like this before.
Oh, everyone has. Everyone has. Hey, you got a minute? No, but I have no other answer to that. I guess I do now. What do you need? Oh, I just wondered, did you see the... Oh, no. That's the beauty of asynchronous conversation is you can volley when you have the thought and the other person can volley when they have the moment or when they're out of flow or when they need to respond, right?
Mm, I can clearly see the value. It's really exciting to hear about this from you directly. So maybe share with us the process that you went through when you were developing and testing your product. What was the feedback like from your customers and what have you learned from it?
Well, some positive, some negative. It's really interesting to see this. We're seeing
creator fine-tuning process.
It really is. We're seeing a lot of creator consumer behavior modeled out in the corporate world. So we thought the world was more ready for our product when we launched it than it's actually seemed that it is. So the user base is growing organically and everything is great. So, but I'm just surprised when I... because we have any new user that comes into Volley gets a conversation called Hello Volley with the team at Volley. And I like to spend a lot of time in that conversation, engaging with users, like the moment that they download the app and a moment of delight or confusion, because we can learn from both of those. So I spend a lot of time there talking to users. And it's just amazing to me how I'm looking at someone who's recording the first video they've ever recorded of themselves in their life. Even though we've had YouTube for almost 2 decades, even though Snapchat, even though TikTok, even though this person Instagram has had a phone in their pocket for the last 10 years, and they've made all kinds of videos of other people. This is the first video they've ever made of their own face.
That's incredible.
And it freaks them out. And they don't say that to me, but they do say things like, oh, when are you going to get filters? Oh, I feel like I'm talking to myself. Oh, you know, can I turn the camera off? I just want to, you know, and all of these things. And I'm like, oh man, really? Really? Don't you see the power of this? And like, so these folks are kind of hard to convince. We call them Zeds. And so there's a Zed on every team, if not multiple on every team. So that's kind of some of the fun we're having is helping our champions, you know, because we also get users who are like, oh my gosh, I can't believe this. This is what I've been looking for years.
Josh, that's super interesting for me because you are a veteran of some form in the office productivity and communication space. But even then, when you released your features, you're still surprised by how the market is reacting to it.
Absolutely. Well, and I am super biased. I grew up with a video camera in my hand. I've made thousands of videos of myself. You have a YouTube channel. Of course, this is the way that you're going to communicate. And of course, when the Snapchat, TikTok generation are in charge, this is the way they're going to want to communicate as well. They're just not in charge yet. And the rest of the folks are still interested in old behavior. So if we believe that the future of communication looks exactly like the past, we're going to get disrupted. You know, we're walking dinosaurs already.
So guys, no matter how much you think your product is going to be accepted or it's going to be the next big thing, you never really know until you've released it into the market and seen how your customers have reacted to it. Josh himself has been in the office communication space for years and he's even exited two successful companies. But even then, he's still surprised by the way that his customers and the market is reacting to Volley and its features. So always make sure you test your product and its features as soon as you can. That's why you should always get your minimum viable product as soon as you can, because that way you can test the idea that you have to see whether it really works before you build out the whole product itself. So back to you, Josh. Now, Volley is one of those services where the moment someone adopts it and implements it into the organization itself, the user base would definitely explode overnight. So what are the strategies that you are currently employing to help these numbers grow?
It's a great question. This is my first product-led growth company. Even though my other companies had interesting products that had growth mechanics, they were kind of performance marketed or sold their way to growth. But with Volley, we're being very patient with growth and we're just working on building a product that is sticky, that is so easy to adopt. We call it the sneeze and initiative internally because I want Volley to be so easy that you like sneeze and you're in five conversations. You can't even help it. It's just, you just run into people in the app and you're talking to them and it's so good and you'll never want to delete it. And so we're trying to make the product that good and back that up with education and the right touch points. And we have kind of an automated onboarding system that we've built that helps a user that's actually just videos of me that kind of pop in at the right time. Hey, I see you just created a workspace. Let me show you a couple things that you need to know right now, right? Because nobody's going to watch some tutorial video.
Man, Josh, you are kind of like the old Microsoft paperclip that used to appear at the oddest of places to offer assistance.
I am, but I hope I'm more helpful than that paperclip because every time I saw that paperclip, I'm like, you can't help me. There's no way you're going to know the answer to my question.
Yeah, but I do kind of miss that guy. Come to think of it, there's so much nostalgia tagged to that memory. He's always there, but he's never really helpful at all.
Right, he was. Yeah, he kept popping out. Like, how do you get this guy to stay in his cave?
Yeah, that's such a good memory, Josh. Okay, so here's my next question. I'm glad you raised the word sticky just now because we're going to talk about customer retention. It's not enough to just get someone to download the app. You want to make sure that they are retained within the ecosystem itself. So what tactics or strategies have you been employing?
So the first thing we did was try to figure out if there was a correlation between some behavior in the app and retention. And we looked at a lot of metrics and events in the app, and it turns out that there is a direct correlation between sending volleys, creating volleys, and retention. In fact, we retain just over 75% of users who send just 10 volleys, which is not very much. Like if someone's using it heavily, you can send 10 volleys in a day. But we retain 98% of users who send 100 volleys. So now,
Those guys are so, you don't need to explain to them what the benefits of volley are anymore.
They get it. They're explaining to other people. They're inviting people to the app every day. I mean, some of our top users are inviting like dozens of people a week. And so we love it. And this is great, right? But we need to get them to 100 volleys. How do you get them? Well, you've got to first get them to 10. Well, how do you get them to 10? Well, you're probably not going to get to 10 volleys chatting with Josh in the Hello Volley conversation. You're only going to get to 10 volleys if you have a couple of friends. And those couple of friends need to be willing to play ball. So that's why we use Volley as the name of the company, because it is kind of a metaphor for the game volleyball. You need to have
going
a willing
back and forth, right?
Yeah, but if you've ever played volleyball with like a kid who can't hit the ball over the net, you realize you've got to keep picking up the ball and you got to serve it again. Right. And they're not going to return it. And you got to pick up the ball and you got to serve it again. So you've got to understand whether you have a willing participant. But if you've got a willing participant on the other side of the net, you can keep that volley going as long as you're able to or as long as you need to. Right. So the goal in getting to 10 volleys is get one or two or three people in that are worthy participants in having a conversation with you in volley. That could be your team. That could be your inner circle. That could be a spouse. That could be a business partner. That could be, you know, whatever that person is. And so we've done a bunch of things to try to help people make the invite flow so easy, give you a personal link in volley, let you share that personal link on your website, on your email, on your LinkedIn profile, like, you know, and just make that so easy that it's really as easy as sneezing, that you can just share your volley link and the world jumps in and you're in meaningful conversations with people you're moving work forward with, and you're never going to delete the app. So that's our goal, and we've been working on it. We've been, you know, bending our numbers up each week. This is kind of the aggregation of marginal gains sort of approach, or growth hacking, right? And yeah, we've just been doing
that.
And
then there'll be that critical point where you might just explode exponentially.
We hope. We think we're starting to see some of those. We're starting to see some bends in some of the important charts, and we're like, ooh, could this be it? Could this be it right now? And it's actually, it's not even teams that are bending these charts up right now. It's all of these little communities, membership communities, paid communities, all of these experts and coaches and creators who are finding volley and realizing, oh my gosh.
Yeah, now that you mentioned, I can understand how this would work for a coach. So instead of having that scheduled 1-on-1 hour of coaching, they can actually allow their students to have a little bit more access to them, to send a certain number of volleys to them, maybe to get an immediate response, right?
Absolutely. It's just-in-time learning or individualized instruction if you're talking in one-to-one. But if you're talking about one-to-many, how long does it take you to write that message to your Discord group? Well, it takes you a couple minutes. How long could you say that? How long would it take you to say that to your Discord group, right? Oh, well, it would take like 20 seconds. Oh, so you just got a 7x speed gain. And how much does your group or your community or your VIP fan appreciate that 20-second message that you just spoke to them?
Yeah,
well, 10x.
The fans will love it.
Over the, you know, because yeah, you could just have an intern writing a Discord message with your profile pic on it. But that was you and you're outside feeding your chickens or doing whatever it is you're doing, right? Like, oh my gosh, I got to see my hero or this person that I'm following or this person that I'm trying to learn from in their real life, at their home or
yeah,
whatever.
It's so impactful, right?
It's way more impactful. So that's what we're seeing blow up right now. And I love it because I actually built a product 12 years ago called Bloomfire that did the same thing, but the world wasn't quite ready for it. So now it does seem actually the world may be ready for all of these little boutique learning communities that are happening around harmonica or watercolor painting or you know, marketing or YouTube secrets or whatever those things are, right?
All right, guys. So here are some key takeaways from Josh. As we have discussed, it's not enough to just have a higher number of users downloading the app. You also need to make sure that your customer retentions are high. So like Josh did, he studied the behavior of the users within the app and how their activity correlated to their usage and retention rates. When he realized that users who have sent over 100 volleys at a 98% retention rate, he knew that the key was to help a new user induct more users into the platform so that they can send volleys to each other organically. So you also need to apply a similar mentality when you are looking at your own customer retention rates. Identify from their behavior what leads to a high retention rate and do your best to supplement and encourage that behavior from growing organically within the users itself. Back to you, Josh. So you've created many successful companies over the years. What is your framework when it comes to coming up with the right ideas and executing them well as well?
Well, I'll quote Kenny Loggins, who, I don't know if an artist from the 70s and 80s wrote the song Footloose. Maybe you've
heard that
of
song.
That, right? Oh, yeah.
I'm an oldies guy, so it's right on my alley. Yeah.
Good. So he said something once that I just think is so perfect. He said, somebody asked him, well, how have you written so many hit records? And he says, well, I allow myself to write crap. And what he meant is he allows himself to just write. He's prolific. He writes so many songs you've never heard of that if you just stay at the bat and stay at the plate and swing long enough, if you just keep writing and writing and writing, you're going to write a hit song. And that's my recipe for business building and company building. My name is on a number of LLCs that are not on my LinkedIn profile because they just didn't pan out or didn't work or they failed to validate. In fact, there were 12 ideas on the way to Volley. I spent 2 years working through hundreds of ideas that I have, validating about a dozen of these that I spent weeks or months on, thousands of dollars on, trying to figure out if it was a valid business idea or something I wanted to build or something the world was ready for. So I don't talk about those 12 ideas. I talk about Volley. And so if you look at hindsight, if you look at my past, it's like, oh my gosh, this guy wrote hit record after hit record after hit record. No. Yeah, I'm not talking about the 12 in between this record and that record that you never hear about and that I don't talk about, right? So that's the recipe, is just be prolific as a creator. Paint as many paintings, write as many songs, create as many companies as you can imagine, and go all in. So I'm not saying do this as a side hustle necessarily. I was all in on all of those. I was building a pickle company. And that was my 100% focus for the 3 months that I was doing that, you know, and it turns out I hired a pickle scientist, build a lab in my garage. Like, I'm all in on building a pickle company.
Scientist.
Yeah.
Sorry, that's quite fascinating. I never knew there's a pickle scientist.
There are. Yes.
There are.
So I hired one of them to kind of work with me, and we made hundreds and hundreds of batches of my family's recipes to try to make a shelf stable version of this magic concoction. And turns out it's scientifically impossible, or impossible from the FDA standpoint, right? So, or the restrictions of the FDA. So on that one, it was I've either got to build a really grindy, capital intensive business, or I've got to sell out and build whatever's on the shelf. And I just didn't want to do either of those. So I passed on that and moved on to the next one. RV park roll-ups, smart car air fresheners, interactive classroom tool, all of these different things I was thinking about and working on. But then just pass. Volley was just the one I couldn't pass on. It was too good. The timing was too right. The world just needs a better way to communicate. Let's build it. And so we did. And it was, and when you get the right idea, it sometimes things just click. Like I reached out to my co-founder and that like pitched the idea in like 5 minutes. He was like, yep, I see it. And I've pitched Joe multiple ideas over the years. And he's like, nah. But this one, it was just like, yep. And he started designing it that night. And we were working on prototypes, you know, the next week, and formed a company the next week. And yeah, it just kind of worked, right?
Each of the ideas that you worked on that didn't pan out, they were kind of like exercises and trainings that you had to go through to make sure that when you were ready to hit that home run, that you were ready to hit that home run.
Yeah, that's right.
So guys, to come up with great business ideas like Josh, give yourself the allowance to come up with the bad ones and just keep at it and train your brain. Josh, I have another question. With regards to the videos that you're filming with the platform on Volley, have there been any legal or compliance considerations that you had to take in mind when you're designing the whole platform, whether it's from a personal data perspective or whether it's confidentiality as well? Is there any encryption built in, or what are the kind of processes that you have built into the software itself to make sure that it's safe for users and corporates as well?
That's a great question. And it's one that is so challenging for startups. There are all of GDPR and CCPA and all of these privacy regulations, which are great. And they certainly are put in place to help make the internet a safer place, right? And we see that. But it is so hard for startups to actually comply to every one of these across the board and build a product that you can actually make reliable and performant. So encryption, let's talk about that one. So volleys are encrypted upon in transit. So when you're sending a volley up from your phone to our servers, then yes, it's encrypted. But right now, because we were getting video from 6,000 different models of Android phones, and you know, all of the models of iPhones across all kinds of connections, there's all kinds of different ways this we've had to build our own custom video pipeline because anything off the shelf just was not performant or reliable enough. So in order to do that and make it reliable, you've got to be able to look at content. And at Volley right now, there are only two people that have keys to even do this. And they're two painfully private engineers that would never look at anything unless, you know, I don't even have the keys to look at any content. But we have users say, hey, I've been trying to send this volley up and it won't send, or this one has garbled sound, or this one. And we still got to look at those things. So our goal is to be end-to-end encrypted very shortly. But in order to even build a product and get it to market, to be in this beta phase, you kind of have to ignore the rules for a short period of time to even build a product. If we made Volley end-to-end encrypted from the beginning, we'd have all kinds of users who just have problems we can't even fix because we can't even understand why that video has a problem or what the user is seeing at this point. So it's a great question. It's one that I'm speaking honestly and openly about, which could open me up for some sort of libel. But it's the honest truth. Any startup kind of has to go through this phase where we've got to crawl, walk, run in terms of security and privacy. But you know, I've built end-to-end encrypted, world-class, secure, enterprise-level software in the past. I know what we need to build, and we are building those things. But if you really expected every startup to have those things in place day one, there would be no startups, and there would be no innovation.
Very, very, very challenging. And like I said, I don't think impossible. Any startup would be in compliance completely from day one. But what's important is that you actively try to make sure that your ship is in order and that you seek the relevant professionals to help you get it in order as soon as you can as well.
Absolutely. And we are, and we're eager about it. And our CTO is probably has a rash every day about this because he knows the gap that exists. And we're working with larger companies and their security audits and passing those for the most part, right? And learning, oh, okay, we're going to need to get this done in the next few months. So it's a journey. And so we really appreciate the companies who are using Volley that understand that, right? That they understand there is no innovation without startups and new companies, and there has to be a little bit of give and take with those.
So what is the process like after the video has been recorded and sent across the Volley platform? Does Volley record and keep every single video file? Because I would imagine that, you know, your internal servers would be jammed up with thousands of terabytes of data very quickly.
Yes. Well, like I said, we've had to build our own custom video pipeline and encoding engine so that we could do what we're able to do without just totally being eaten alive by server costs. And we've done a great, great, great job at that so far. Like, hats off to our CTO and our engineering team. Like our costs are way less than kind of at the same scale as what Quizzer was. And Quizzer was just online quizzes, text-based quizzes with some images in them. But man, our server costs were just out of control at that company. So we've done a great job. Volleys expire after 60 days. And according to our terms, are deleted after, I think it's 6 months or something like that. So we do clean up after ourselves. And there's no way we're going to be able to offer a free product and just allow videos recorded of something you said 3 years ago to be available or searchable, because nobody's really going back to them. And it's really only companies that need to keep, you know, a 7-year record that would be interested in that. And of course, they're willing to pay for that service. So that's why we feel like with a free product, volleys expire after 60 days, they go away. And then we're able to do according to our terms and remove and replace those things. But we've built a pretty, pretty reliable pipeline that gives you a pretty high quality video that's very, very compressed. So there's a lot of magic tricks into this video messaging thing as we're learning.
I see. Now, Josh, entrepreneurship is never an easy journey. Who would you say you have an immense amount of gratitude for and you would like to take this chance to say thank you to right now?
Oh, well, I'll have to do it without trying to tear up. But my mom actually is who I'd have to say, because she was an entrepreneur and didn't know it. And I didn't know it. And it's not that she had some secret life. It's just that we didn't have a word for what she did. She cleaned houses. She cleaned houses and she had clients. And sometimes those clients would have her do odd jobs like painting houses or papering or removing rocks and building a waterfall or all kinds of things. She could do anything. And she believed it. Like, she could do anything she set her mind to. And that's what she taught me and my brother. And I believe it. I still believe it today. And so it wasn't until like recently, like really the last 10 years that I realized, oh my gosh, my mom was an entrepreneur. And we didn't understand that. We didn't know that. She made her own money, building her own business. And we kind of overlooked that. And the place where I grew up, there was entrepreneur wasn't a word that was used. Like, nobody in my high school ever said that word. Very few people ran their own businesses or even understood why that was valuable in the world, right? So it's just kind of a different kind of place. It was in rural Michigan that I grew up, a lot of blue-collar workers. The value was get a good job and hold on to that with all of your life so that you can sometime retire from this company that you worked at for 30, 40 years. That's what my dad did, and that was kind of the example. He worked for the power company. So in my goggles growing up, what I saw was I had three options. I can work for the power company, I could work at the prison because there was a state prison in our hometown, or I could become a teacher. And those were my examples. But I totally overlooked the one that my mom was doing, which was entrepreneurship. And it's just until lately that I've appreciated that. So that's who I have to give a shout out to, is my mom for paving the way and teaching me how to dream.
Oh, that's very nice. In fact, I think you picked up a lot from your mom, not just as an entrepreneur, but I think the handiness that, you know, you came with all your projects, probably a little bit of her rubbed off on you as well.
No doubt. She can't move those rocks for the waterfall that those clients want to build. And so, yeah, I learned how to make waterfalls out of sandstone and concrete, and how to wallpaper, and how to fix this handle when it broke, because, you know, we just broke it when we're trying to repaint this house, or all of these things. Like, she would take on all these crazy projects, like total refurbs of houses. Like, yeah, we can do that. And she'd bring her two boys, and we didn't know how to do most of these things, but we figured it out. And then we'd go to the store and buy tools to figure the rest out. So yeah, we did learn a lot. She is a dreamer, and I love her for it.
That's so cool. Now, Josh, if the listeners only remember one thing from today's conversation, what would you like it to be?
There's a new way to communicate if you're willing to be seen.
How can the listeners get in contact with you if they want to learn more about Volley?
Well, go to volleyapp.com. You kind of can't not get in contact with me right now. Like I said, every new user gets the Hello Volley conversation. Totally not scalable. It's already reaching the fringes of scalability, but that's probably the best way, or you can go rummage around LinkedIn and find me there.
Josh, thank you so much for joining us today and sharing with us your stories, experiences, and this new form of communication. I can really see it becoming a part of the new way to communicate in the office setting in the future. Thank you for joining us.
Thank you. That's my goal and vision as well. So I hope you're right. And thanks for having me, Ted.
Guys, thank you so much for joining Josh and I in today's episode. If you only walk away with one key takeaway, I hope you remember the importance of coming up with your minimum viable product and testing it in the market as soon as you can. You never fully really understand what the market wants from you and how they react to your product or service. Get the feedback from the market directly and then see how you can pivot thereafter. Now, as before, if you've received any value from the show, I would love if you could subscribe to the show, leave a review on Apple Podcasts, and to share the show with somebody who will find it useful as well. The show is running twice a week with new episodes every Mondays, Wednesdays, and Fridays. All updates, tools, and resources and my email list are available on tedteo.com. That's TEDTEO.com. That's all for me today. I'll see you guys next time.